This is Starts the Rest of Us, episode 165. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Rob?
Well, I'm pleased to announce that Drip is now outranking Motley Fool, fool.com, for the term drip. And I didn't think I was ever going to get above them. Drip was on the second page for that phrase for a while, and then it climbed up to number 10, and now it looks like, as of today, in an incognito browser from, you know, my current location, it's ranking for Drip isn't going to get me a lot of customers. It's just going to make it so that when people hear the product name on a podcast and don't hear that the domain name is different, because it's getdrip.com, it'll help them find it. It would be great to rank number one for that, not for the true organic traffic that it'll get, but just for the ease of finding me in Google.
I'm looking at it now, and you're actually listed number 6 right below them. I love drip.com as the first one.
I love Drip.
So I don't know.
I know.
Yes.
I need to look at that site and figure out what they're talking about.
I think it's things to do in Orlando. Yeah. It says Drip is Orlando's best kept secret. I think it's some sort of, you know, the Blue Man Group. Mm-hmm. I think it's something kind of similar to that.
Got it. So that'll be a tough one to outrank. I bet they have quite a bit of authority and history in Google at this point.
Yeah, most likely.
How about you? What you been up to?
Well, I started working on some of the MicroConf sponsorships, so I'm still trying to get the rate card all straightened out, but that's coming along pretty well, and once that's all done, then I can go out and start contacting the sponsors from last year and see if I can drum up any new sponsors for the conference.
Yeah, and that's microconf.com. If you are interested in coming, it's the conference for self-funded startup founders, and it is going to be probably in mid-April is what we're looking at the Tropicana. Our email list is about twice what it was last year, so it's probably going to sell out fairly quickly again, and we should be selling tickets in, I'd say, by mid-January at the latest. Other news for me, I started paid acquisition last week, which is a dubious proposition. I was doing it more to test out analytics and to kind of test some landing pages rather than actually get trials. The reason I couch it like that is last week was the week before Christmas. And so I knew that getting people to click through and sign up for a 21-day trial when they're about to probably go on vacation is not likely to happen. As such, as I started running the ads right away, I noticed that my Google goals were not firing when people converted to trial. So that is, you know, a non-starter when you're running paid acquisition. So we had to troubleshoot that and figure out how to get the goals to fire. It isn't as simple as it used to be with Google. They made Google Analytics so unbelievably complicated compared to what it was even 12 or 18 months ago that getting goals to work is by far more complicated than it was a while ago. So we do have it working as of today.
Oh, that's interesting. I kind of put all of my, not all, but quite a few of my Audit Shark marketing activities kind of on hold for the time being, just because it's Christmas and I really don't expect a lot of people to come in and be using it or to sign up for a new trial or anything like that.
That's why SaaS is so nice, right? Because people are still paying a subscription fee for December, even though they're not really going to buy anything new. Whereas when you have a one-time sale app, like I have .NET Invoice, I mean, the sales typically just plummet unless we do a big, like a Black Friday special or some type of Christmas special. .NET Invoice takes a big hit in December because nobody really wants to go spend a bunch of money, you know, in the last 2 weeks of the year. They're just thinking about other things.
The counterpoint to that is the companies that have a giant budget that they lose at the end of the year if they don't use it. So there are some people who will spend the money. But
that's true.
You know.
And there are certain pieces of software where it makes sense to start them on the first of the year, like a tax software, an accounting software, to make a clean break between 1 year and the next. I imagine that those sales could go up. And if you had an app like that, it would make sense to do a special in December, kind of saying, hey, get set up by January 1, get your books in order, that type of thing.
I'm working out some of the reporting bugs in Audit Shark. And on another completely boring note, I've been analyzing my Audit Shark marketing efforts to figure out what I should be doing as soon as January starts rolling around and, you know, kind of what my priorities are going to be.
You're analyzing existing efforts that you've made, or are you compiling a list of approaches and tactics that you're going to use in January?
Yeah, that's okay, it. Basically, kind of figuring out what it is that I want to do and what I'm going to do first.
Got it.
That's more it than anything else. You know, I have to drive the traffic, but then I also have to make sure that it's converting. And right now, just up until lately, I haven't had the page open for people to come in and sign up. So that has been, I couldn't even measure it before. And now I can start to measure it, but I still need to get people to the site. And because it's December, they're just not going to sign up, or at least I don't expect anybody to. today we're going to recap our five biggest mistakes from this past year. But you can look at some of these things and you can say that, oh, well, you know, if you did something to correct a mistake, then couldn't you also see that as your biggest win? And I think that there's certainly cases where that's true, but there's other cases where you may have strategically chosen to do something in a certain way, knowing that it was a mistake, but not necessarily realizing how big of a mistake it was.
And you say that because you notice that several of both of our mistakes are start with the word not. In other words, it was not doing something or not doing it soon enough is the mistake we're mentioning. There was a behavior that we realized that has been successful for us, but the regret or the mistake is that we didn't do it sooner in the year. And I think the point of this episode is not for you and I to sit here and talk through our mistakes, but the idea is to get you, the listener, to reflect on what perhaps are your five biggest mistakes from the past year. And even looking at, you know, perhaps what are your five biggest wins from the past year? And then take the time to maybe analyze why they happened, to analyze how you can avoid making similar mistakes or the same mistake in the coming year. And I think another piece to this is kind of asking yourself, what gave me life this year and what sucked a lot of life out of me? Both looking at this as a way to grow your business, as a way to not make the same mistakes because that keeps you going in circles, also as a way to structure your work and personal life so that they are sustainable and that they give you life over the course of the next year.
So to kick things off, one of my biggest mistakes was not paying enough attention to my health. Back in August, I discovered this health issue that was impacting a lot of the things that I was doing and just my ability to get different things done. Discovering that and dealing with the situation has made all the difference in the world. I mean, I was actually able to get to the point where Audit Shark has been launched. There's still a lot to do, of course, but I feel like I'm actually making progress at this point as opposed to before where I felt like I was doing a lot, but I was spinning my wheels more often than not and not making forward progress. It's hard sometimes to know the difference between when you're doing stuff that is moving you forward versus when you're doing stuff just to kind of maintain your current position that doesn't actually get you moving forward.
Yeah, I'm guilty of this as well. It's easy to do and it's easy to just keep going on in autopilot and ignoring things like, you know, really sore shoulders or the inability, you know, people get carpal tunnel. You just charge through and you start taking Advil on the bill and you don't address the real issue and get the fix done. And the longer you let it go on, not only does it get worse, but you don't even realize how much it's actually impacting your productivity because you forget what it's like to feel at 100%. Obviously, really glad that you caught yours and something that I'm looking to not do in the coming year.
You know, some of the different actions that I've taken since then. And it's just once you have taken those, you look up and it's just, wow, that made such a huge difference. Why didn't I do this sooner? Which goes back to what you said. You know, there's a lot of these things, you discover them and you just think to yourself, why didn't I do this sooner? And the fact is, you just didn't know.
So my first mistake is letting email negatively impact my productivity. Now, I've been able to maintain inbox zero now for several months, and that has been helpful. But it still has not freed me up in the way that I envision in my mind that I can someday be freed up from email. I get an enormous volume of email every month. And anytime I take time off, I come back and basically lose a solid 8-hour day of just going through email. And I've tried a bunch of different approaches. I don't think there's anything feasible. There's no solution. There's no answer that I've seen to date. A lot of these are coming from my apps. And so my VA is already going through support issues and then they wind up in my email to show me that a support issue has been assigned to me. So it's not as if putting a VA looking at my email can handle that because these are things I have to do. It's a mistake. I don't have an answer on how to fix it yet. But my hope is that in 2014, this is something that I do figure out a way to reduce the amount of time that I'm sitting there, you know, working with email.
I do have a couple of anecdotal things. Like one is you could create an internal email address. It's like secretrob@thenumagroup.com. And those are the things where just specific internal stuff needs to go to you. And then you have somebody look through your regular email. And the other one is Ramit Sethev was telling me that at BehaviorCon that he can usually tell at this point because he's gotten so many emails that he can tell within the first couple of sentences whether or not something's going to be even worth reading.
But I like the secret Rob idea. I would agree with Ramit, and I think I now have that ability because I've read so many emails. So it's not the reading that takes the time. It's once I get into it, it's the decision of do I act on this or not? And then if I do act on it, then the real time starts, right? A lot of it is maybe an Academy member, a MicroConf attendee, a listener asking for opinion, feedback about their idea, asking about any number of things. And since I like helping people and I've always felt like it's a responsibility and something that I want to do to give back to the community, that stuff is quite time consuming. I record screencasts for people. I do all kinds of stuff. I don't want to leave that behind, but I've already reduced kind of the number and the time I spend on those responses. I don't know how far I want to peel that back.
Heard another strategy for allocating specific time blocks, so like an hour or 2 hours a week or something like that, and then once you hit that time, it's like, okay, that's it, I can't spend any more time on this stuff. But that inevitably, that kind of leads to what you said, is like letting things just kind of drop on the floor and there's only so much you can do. My second biggest mistake was not starting a mailing list for my blog sooner. And this partially is a result of not really paying attention to FeedBurner, but where I just wasn't writing for my blog anymore. I've talked to enough people where they've said, hey, you know, I really would appreciate it if you would start, you know, writing a little bit more, give me feedback on this. And a lot of things that I see are just things that would make great blog posts. I haven't been turning them into blog posts. So I've started getting back into that, but I started a mailing list several weeks ago, and I've already got a ton of people who were on my RSS feed kind of converted over onto that. So that seems to be going pretty well, but it just seems like that's something that I know in the back of my mind, I should have started that much, much sooner. And I just never did. I mean, I never really made it a priority. Like, as you said, you like writing back to people and giving them your feedback and thoughts and opinions on things that they're working on in order to help them. And I kind of feel like this is exactly the same way. It's helping other people and just kind of giving back.
My second mistake is related to yours. It's not carving out more time for my Software by Rob email newsletter, the one that I already have. I started it a couple years ago. I've been building the list. I have probably approaching 7,000 people on it. And I have emails that go out, but not as many as I would like. This is purely out of a lack of time and of too many things going on in terms of conferences and apps and the podcast and all that stuff. But I'm hoping and I'm planning to give more time to this in the coming year because it's something that I enjoy. Like you know, you and I first met when we were bloggers, and we met because we both liked to write and we enjoyed that and we enjoyed conveying our thoughts through that medium. And I have not written nearly as much in the past year to 2 years than I did over the previous 5 to 7. And so it's something that I've let go because it's so damn time consuming to sit there and crank out a really good piece of content. But I did find that when I'm not blogging and when I'm just sending emails to my list, there are some time-saving ways that you can do it in terms of doing a screencast or just having shorter articles that I never felt comfortable doing with my blog. I think that with not a huge time investment, that I could really, you know, continue investing in this list and getting solid info out to them. So if you are interested in that and you're not signed up, it's called Start Small, Get Big. And that's my email newsletter. It's at softwarebyrob.com and it's in the right-hand side column. And yours is at singlefounder.com in case you haven't signed up for Mike's email newsletter.
My third biggest mistake was not extracting myself from project implementation sooner than I did. And I've spent a good deal of time making sure that the people who are working for me on a part-time basis have the things that they need to move things forward. But I feel like I've spent a lot of time over the past couple of years doing probably way too many things myself. One of the things that I've done recently, which has really helped out a lot, is hired a bookkeeper. And her and I sat down for about 3 hours yesterday, basically going over all of my business finances and trying to convert everything all over onto one accounting platform so that she only has one spot to go for everything. And then just putting processes and procedures in place for how to deal with different situations and invoices and receipts. But one of the other things I'm doing is I'm handing her all of my personal stuff as well. So like I'm giving her access to my personal bank accounts. And whenever I get things in the mail, I'm going to put them in a box and she's going to get them like once or twice a week. And she's going to handle all of that stuff. I basically do not want to touch any of that stuff. So there's all this day-to-day stuff that I just shouldn't be handling. That's something that I've been very glad that I've dealt with, but it's something that probably was a long time in coming just because I didn't really feel comfortable just taking that stuff and handing it off to somebody else. And as I said, there's a lot of stuff with AudioShark as well, where I worked on so much of it that I'm like, oh, this is just this giant unwieldy thing at this point. I don't know if somebody else can jump in and work with it. And that's definitely not the case. Other people can make progress on it. It's just a matter of me becoming comfortable with allowing other people to go in and do that stuff.
Yeah, so one of your biggest mistakes of the last year turns into basically outsourcing success stories. You know, it's several places where you were able to extract yourself from the details. And I feel like you started making a lot of progress with AutoShark once you got other developers involved.
And I think part of that is just that, you know, the comfortability factor. I mean, because it's not like I put somebody in there and said, oh, I need you to build this giant complicated thing. It was, you know, these little things here and there. And then as they get more comfortable with the code base, I get more comfortable handing them stuff that's more and more complicated. So, you know, there's a give and take there. It is a progression. I think it would be difficult for somebody to just jump in right now and you just hand them this, you know, a complicated function. But it's that onboarding process for getting a new developer up and running with any new code base. I mean, the code base is sufficiently large. It's going to be a little bit complicated. You need to have some sort of a ramping up period and need to be able to expect that.
My third mistake from the past year was not focusing sooner on figuring out how to fix Hittail after Google's not provided debacle, where they said that they're not going to give us the search terms people use to find our website anymore. And this one, you know, it's a mistake or a regret because Hittail, it's one of my big apps, and it's definitely lost a good chunk of revenue over the past 3 or 4 months since Google announced the not provided stuff. Kind of the counterpoint to it is that I was looking before Google announced this how to get keywords out of stuff, and Google wasn't giving this data anywhere else. And just within the past maybe 30 days or so, I've noticed that they are giving enough information through the webmaster tools, and I now have an alpha version that I've coded up that basically will work around the not provided stuff, at least as best as anyone can. And I'm going to be working with an alpha and beta testers here in January. And I think that I should actually be able to basically get the value back, or most of the value back, that was lost during this whole thing. I wasn't able to make this happen sooner before the revenue started to slide on it. I'm pretty confident they'll be able to build it back up, but it's just, you know, every time you lose those customers, it's just so hard to get them back. It's so much work to replace them.
My fourth biggest mistake was not starting a mastermind group sooner. And this is something that you talked about in the past. You know, having a mastermind group can really be helpful in moving you forward. And it wasn't until I got into it and started having mastermind group meetings that I realized how incredibly helpful it would be. I think that one of the comments that you've made in the past is that having people who have kind of heard the story and have heard some of the guts of it from way back when, that helps give them a little bit more context today than somebody that you just met. You kind of give them the story and rundown of what it is that you're working on and problems that you're having. Whereas if they don't have that 6 or 12 months worth of history, there may be insights that they're just not going to have because they don't have that history.
So my fourth mistake is kind of funny. It's almost trivial compared to these other ones we're naming. But basically, within the past month, I made a $1,700 error with Amazon EC2 instances. And I went to purchase some of the reserved instances. You can get them a lot cheaper than if you're just paying hourly. And I bought one that was 5 instances for a month instead of 1 instance for 5 months. And it just, suffice to say, over the course of the next 30 to 45 days, it cost me $1,700. And what's interesting about this is the reason that I made the mistake is because we're just moving so fast. I couldn't spend the time, or I tried to spend the time to research it. The documentation sucks. I emailed support. They were no help. The forums don't tell you anything. So at a certain point, I had to make the call. Am I going to do this or am I not? It's on my task list. And I either need to just hide this thing and I need to pay Amazon a higher price, or I need to pull the trigger and buy this reserved instance. And what could possibly go wrong, right? It's a result of quick decision making. Now, kind of the defense in my mind of it as it happened, I mean, when I saw it happen, I was like, huh, that really sucks that I'm going to lose this money. But if it's the worst thing that happens to me this year, if it's the worst mistake I make this year, I will consider myself very, very lucky. It made me realize just how much I value time more than money. This $1,700 error compared to all the decisions that I've made quickly, or, you know, the amount of money that my apps will make me in a certain amount of time, it doesn't compare. And so I think there's a balance here of like not making stupid or rash decisions, but also realizing that if you make 100 or 200 decisions in any given month, that being able to make them quick and then live with the consequences may very well be more valuable than sitting there and doing in-depth research and, you know, and never making a mistake, but getting, you know, 1/10 of the number of things done.
I've looked at stuff like that I've done before. And I used to do this when I was looking at hard drives and computer equipment to buy. And one of the things that I came to the conclusion of was at one point I was spending so much time kind of agonizing over the decision between two different hard drives, one of which was, I don't know, let's say it was $160, and the other one was, you know, $240 or something like that, which isn't a huge amount of money. But if you spend more than an hour making that decision, then you're essentially just wasting money. And you extrapolate that over stuff where you're making decisions over the course of 10 or 15 hours, and you're agonizing over all that time. At some point, if you had just pulled the trigger and chosen the more expensive one, it wouldn't matter at the end of the day, because you just wasted all that time. Were you paying yourself for that time, it would have covered the cost. And the fifth biggest mistake I would say that I've made is depending on Google too much for some of my data and services. And I think this goes back to what I'm referring to as the FeedBurner debacle right now, where FeedBurner just seems like it is not working on my site. I'm looking at probably switching to FeedBlitz sometime in the near future for RSS from my blog. But it feels like I'm relying so much on Google's data feeds and services at this point that if something goes wrong and Google decides to change their mind about different things, I may not necessarily have ways of extracting myself. And this isn't just limited to like the Google Glass that I got or my Gmail account. I mean, there's a lot of Google services that we use kind of every day, and it makes me worried, to be perfectly honest. And I feel like it's a mistake. And I guess at the end of the day, I feel like I have so many eggs in Google's basket that if they decide that they want to do something that kind of goes against my goals, then there's just nothing I can do about it. And I'm certainly not alone in that, I don't think. I don't know what other options I have in some cases. You know, I mean, Google Webmaster Tools are what they are, and they're great for doing research, and they're great for all this different analysis. But and there are paid options out there for different things, but they only take data so far.
Yeah, and anyone who built a rank tracker and has had that API shut down and then the scraping blocked, or anyone who relies on Google keyword data for any reason, meaning pretty much every webmaster in the country, and anyone who does email marketing and relies on the image tracking that Google's now caching, and they didn't totally break that, but they certainly are having an impact on it. You know, all of us realize the impact and the amount of control that Google actually has over a lot of things now. And I can imagine that these changes Google is making about, I mean, they're kind of putting a quash on SEO, right? And a lot of SEOs are moving into content marketing. And Google's it seems with this image move, maybe clamp down on email marketing as well. But it seems that each of these probably drives incremental revenue for them, because you can imagine that people will go out and buy more ads in order to make up for the loss of, you know, of the traffic and the conversions and such. So it is a scary proposition, as you've said. And my fifth and final biggest mistake from last year was underestimating the amount of work it takes to launch a new SaaS app. I think less than launching late, I think the bigger thing was how many other projects that launching Drip caused me to push off. Just the sheer volume of attention and effort that I needed to spend, along with Derek, my developer, who was first working half-time and then went full-time, and then I went full-time on it. I mean, that I just didn't anticipate that early on in the year. And I always forget how much time it takes to get these things off the ground and get them built up. What's interesting is that a mistake is different than a regret. Like, I don't regret doing this. I don't know that I could put my finger on exactly the repercussions that it had, aside from me pushing off a few projects. But just remembering that SaaS apps take hundreds and hundreds of hours, especially if they're in a competitive market like this, where people are already, you know, ahead of you in features, and you don't necessarily want to do a feature battle anyways, you kind of need to know going into it. Because I can imagine if I hadn't started with momentum and someone coding on it full time, this would be a project that someone would think that they could get done in a few months and would basically take them to the point where they would probably quit. If we didn't already have momentum on it, and I could see the light at the end of the tunnel within a few months, I think it'd be a tough project to launch kind of a major SaaS app in a competitive area if you're trying to do it on nights and weekends. These markets are definitely getting more crowded as time goes on.
You mean Audit Shark wasn't an early warning for you?
Indeed. I've had a few conversations in the past couple of months of folks who are launching SaaS, and they're just like, oh man, I hadn't realized that there are this many other competitors, or all the work it takes to actually get this done and launched, and then the marketing and all that stuff. So, and then I think the last kind of the honorable mention is kind of maybe a shared mistake you and I made, is not starting a podcast mailing list in 2013, because it's kind of a no-brainer, right? We're coming on here every week to talk about stuff. We should have a minimum an email sign-up form and figure out what to send to the audience at that point. Whether it's probably not an update when every episode goes live because people are already subscribed to it, but maybe a call out to some specific comments or some specific news items related to the podcast, or just figuring out what it is that we're able to keep people in the loop on. Because I know you and I don't have the time to create a bunch of original content and to start another blog, you know, or another full email newsletter, but I still think that there are a lot of listeners out there who would love to keep in touch with what's going on, and having them on a mailing list would probably be beneficial for everybody. So give it some thought for yourself. Think about your biggest mistakes, potentially how you can stop doing them in the new year. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Outta Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups, or by RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.